Madison, Wisconsin is as good as it gets if you are like me and you love the college sports.
This is The Jump Around with Jim Rutledge and Pablo Iglesias, streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel.
Dancing down the sidelines. Can they catch him? No! The Badgers answer instantly. There will be no undefeated champion on Wisconsin with an unbelievable stretch drive to the championship game.
Guarded again. Inside the five, touchdown! What a performance by Melvin Gordon!
Chucky Hepburn, Big Ten on the line! Yes!
Legacy cemented! The 2021 Badgers will go down in history as the first ever at Wisconsin to win a national championship!
That is the best college sports town in America.
Jump Around, a Badger-dedicated show here on ESPN Madison's YouTube stream. I'm Jim Rutledge, alongside the Pablo Iglesias. We have you.
I like it.
We have you for the next hour or so, give or take a little bit. We're going to be joined by Alex Dono. He is a Miami Hurricanes podcaster. We are excited to talk to Alex about all the things going on with, Xavier Lucas going to Miami, and the Hurricanes almost seem a little bit like a quasi-rival.
Couple hot button things going on.
On the football field side of things. So we're excited to talk to Alex in a little bit here. But it does kind of lead into a little bit here, because Badger fans, rightfully so, are annoyed at the process that allowed Xavier Lucas to end up in Miami. And University of Wisconsin is basically taking Miami to court for how Xavier Lucas was recruited. University of Wisconsin was also in court around Nizir Forcourting, and he initially had an injunction against the NCAA following the 2024 season. Basically, he's trying to get eligible to be able to play, saying that his time at Grand Valley State should not have counted towards eligibility. And on Wednesday, a 2-1 decision in the U.S. Court of Appeals kind of killed Nizir's opportunity, or at least set it back a little bit. They still say that Nizir is ineligible for the 2025 season. It removes a veteran member of the Wisconsin starting lineup. He was a projected starter, but this is frustrating on multiple levels. One, like the NCAA, what are we doing here? Like, give the kid the opportunity to play. He's not going to go play in the pros. This isn't.
What good does it serve?
With all due respect to Nizir, like, this isn't a All-American Heisman Trophy candidate the Badgers trying to backdoor away into playing. This kid's trying to get one more year playing football. To your point, what does this serve? And then on the other side of it, the juxtaposition of allowing Xavier Lucas, and I don't have any issues against the kid there as well. My general rule in all of this around the NCAA is let these kids play.
Yeah, going back to the question, what does it serve? Like, how it is, and how it derails everything too, because he could have, you know, I don't know exactly what his draft stock would have looked like, or if he signs a undrafted free agency deal. You never know. You never know which team will give him the opportunity. But that derails a lot of different things now. Now he misses that window. Now it's like, okay, what's going to happen from here? He trained with the team a little bit too. I know that he was one of the higher ranked players on College Football 26 too for the Badgers. I mean, it's just more of like the talent. I was talking to one of my friends about this too, who was also really disappointed, because I'm not going to lie, that secondary of Rico Hallman and Nice Year four carrying, that would have been sick. And I'm excited though too. I know I'm looking at the roster right now. Deanna Hill is a name that sticks out to me, but
that's not the point today. Like, we're talking about what's happening to Nizir right now.
Yeah, it's what, you know, it's more of just like the principle of it, and it's like there's so many layers to it. You want to give this guy an opportunity to play, like you said too. It wasn't anything shady. It wasn't anything backdoor. It was just trying to get another year of eligibility. And I just feel like there could have been a lot more wiggle room here. I'm not a lawyer. I could see like that the evidence has been put out there, but also I'm like, what is the case? And again, going to the point, what is the NCAA really trying to prove here? What are they trying to get at? It just doesn't feel like that, you know, it's, you like being the bad guy? What's going on here?
It feels like a last grasp at power. We've talked before on some of our other shows on ESPN Madison, Prep Mania being one of them, about the WIAA here in Wisconsin, and they've made some weird judgments against players. And anytime, whether it's college or high school, where you're denying a kid an opportunity from playing, I'm anti it. And they're seems to be nothing, I would say, fraudulent going on here. There's no trying to gain some advantage. I honestly, in this case, I think Nizir is just trying to be made whole, for lack of a better word. Like, I think it's fair to assume that maybe he did not get his full college experience, and that's what he's trying to pursue right now, Pablo. And, like, that is something I'm always going to be for. And the NCAA, they didn't learn their lesson. Like, we are in this issue, and I've said this a million times. Why is NIL / pay for play such a disaster? Because the NCAA was power hungry and greedy, and they let this ride, this old system that's been blown up, all the way to the Supreme Court because they thought, well, the Supreme Court will hold it up. The Supreme Court said, none of this is legal. You created a monopoly. You're taking advantage of these kids. Now there's no system in place, not because of the kids, not because of the athletes, because of the NCAA's need and want for power and greed. And this is just the last grasp to at least be able to hold on to some power.
It just feels like you're just knocking out a dream at this point. It feels like that, you know, wherever it is, like hopefully Nizir, I'm not sure. Hopefully he has some type of whatever it is on the pro level, whether it's the NFL or any type of pro ball. But it's just frustrating to know that, like, if this is your grasp at power, just frankly, what the hell are you trying to do? Like, if you're trying to get power here and trying to just squash a dream, one extra year to play, because I know too, like, I was there for Nizir's first availability when he came to Wisconsin. He was trying to prove a point that he could make it from a Division II school, mm-hmm. and the coaches were behind him. Paul Haynes, one of the coaches too for on the Wisconsin staff, was right behind him saying, like, he's a kid. It doesn't matter what level you play at. It's just about how you play. And Nizir, I think, has been a guy year after year that I've just been, you know, really, it's been cool to see him develop over those years. And now the fact that he doesn't actually get this opportunity when he really could have been the number one guy to come out and ball out, it just sucks. There's no other way to put it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have an interesting question for you guys. Because
we'll be the deciders.
Okay, okay. All right. We'll see.
Interesting.
Because I totally
huh?
agree that this seems like a last grasp for power by the NCAA. But I'm going to talk Xavier Lucas later. He just skirted by the NCAA's ruling and just totally ignored it, unenrolled at Wisconsin, re-enrolled at Miami. Who's going to stop Nizir Forkirin from just playing? Like, what if he just played? What's the NCAA actually going to do if he decided, I'm going to suit up, I'm going to play my last season as a Wisconsin Badger? I don't think the Badgers would do that. It doesn't seem like something this athletic program would want to deal with, but how are they going to stop him?
Well, that's a great point. I don't hate the idea. Because it really would just point out that the NCAA is basically inept at this point and doesn't need to exist. Because it also goes back to what they're going to take away wins from Wisconsin retroactively.
Yep.
You know who went to the Final Four? Michigan with Chris of the Fab Four. I don't care. Banner or not. Like, you can't erase my memories. I don't care about – Reggie Bush has a Heisman.
Mm-hmm.
These things happen, so that's always kind of been the case of asking forgiveness. Michigan's still national title holders.
Exactly.
There's no real repercussions for them. They're what? Their head coach got suspended for a couple games?
Yep, okay. Yeah. Their head coach got suspended.
Does anyone not recognize Michigan as the national champs? No.
Now,
no.
If one of
the guys has a documentary about him.
Yeah, if Nizir was a premier player, first-round pick caliber guy, I say go ahead and do it, and with all due respect, this isn't the hill to die on because you're probably not even getting an extra win out of this. But if you had an opportunity to have a Charles Woodson-esque player back there and the NCAA was being difficult about it, I absolutely would file another injunction and then try to just slow play that. What are the police going to come and stop them?
Is the other team, is Ohio State just not going to take the field because Nizir Forkirin's on the Badger, like on the roster? Doesn't make sense.
So before we transition here to another annoying topic, I do want to point out the Badgers are also in court with the accusers against Quintez Cephas because they initially had a court decision kind of thrown out saying that the Badgers did nothing wrong, saying that with reinstating Quintez Cephas a couple years ago, while a new judge looked at it on appeal and said, hey, there's enough evidence here to say that the Badgers fast-track Quintez Cephas back to the football field because he was a football player, so we're going to see that through. So the legal department at the University of Wisconsin is busy because they're still fighting for Nizir. They're fighting to get I guess, made whole on the Xavier Lucas side of things, and now they're fighting to prove that they didn't do anything wrong in how they handled the eligibility of Quintez Cephas. So a busy time for Wisconsin. Not, I mean, I hope they win all these games, but I hope they don't win more court cases than games. Like that's really what a...
What a situation there.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, a couple more court cases, and they might get to that point.
Yeah. What a time for the Sounder.
Teddy Bridgewater. He is from South Florida, and we'll talk to Alex Dono about this situation as well. He's joining us in a few minutes from Locked On Canes. We're going to talk about the Xavier Lucas situation. He also does Hurricanes post-game shows, and there's a little non-traditional rivalry there between Wisconsin and Miami. Amped up a little bit about the Xavier Lucas side of things. But Teddy Bridgewater, former NFL quarterback, he has been suspended from coaching a high school team in Miami because he provided players with financial benefits that he did report to the school. Now, these benefits, in general, what I've gathered has been like cryotherapy, physical therapy, Uber rides to practice, and food.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? I don't know what the governing body down in Florida is, and I've lived in Florida.
Florida gym.
I'm sorry. The only thing that Teddy Bridgewater probably did wrong was report it. Because I've been around those high schools. I was near some of those high schools when I lived in Boca. Those high schools were bigger than Florida Atlantic University when I went there. The amount of money that is given to those schools that ends up in the players' hands or benefits for the players is insane. So I'm not buying it at all that all those other schools down there that are powerhouses are not also supplying benefits of this level. And you know what? I am pro helping people underage. Football players are not. Like, I'm pro free lunch, take a little out of my taxes, fine. Every kid should have access to any food they want to have. And I'm also pro, these kids need access to physical therapy. They need Uber rides to practice. They need food to make sure that they're getting nutrients after these workouts. I'm in. Get all of it. It's and if Teddy Bridgewater wants to do it, we should be like building a statue for him, or patting him on the back, not trying to punish him or the kids.
What kind of message does it send where it's just like, it's clearly that he's just trying to give back. He's trying to help these kids. And I understand the giant gray area because it's, let's be real here. This isn't like a, it's more gray. It's not a black and white issue. It's more of just like a massive gray area of like, you're providing, yes, a couple extra steps. You're helping kids get to practice. You're helping them and recover. You're hopefully teaching them like some better situations of how to recover. Like from a guy who very much knows, who is at that level, has been at that level. And I think it's just like it sends, in my mind, the wrong message for a guy who's trying to give back and do right for community, team he cares about, all that stuff. It just feels really weird to me that it's similar to just what we were talking about with Workering too. Is this really the hill that you want to die on? This is like, again, I get it. You don't want to provide, you want to have an equal, fair playing field. But let's be real here too. Is it really just like a fair game across the way too? It's not like that he's, you know, paying these guys to go to this school or whatever it is. Like, you know, you never know what, and I'll just say it like this, you never really know what the situations are for anybody. Like, you know, if these kids, you know, if they, like, they need the Uber ride to get, you know, from home or whatever, they don't have a bike, they can't get the bus, whatever the situation is, they don't have a car. I mean, again, we don't need to get into those weeds necessarily, but it's just more of like, hey, he's probably just helping out. And the fact that, like, he's, you know, this school and he's even getting, like, you know, suspended for this is, you know, it just seems really weird to me that he's just trying to help.
Yeah, err on the side of compassion. Like, I think that's kind of the easiest way. The first start of the show is basically, if you're going to err on the side of compassion. All right, J.J. Watt speaks to the Badgers. He came this week and spoke to the team on the defensive side of the ball and the team in general. And I love this move. For me, it's better than, like, John Gruden coming through. Because John Gruden,
got against John Gruden coming to Wisconsin?
He's got no ties. The complaints that former Badger players had and fans had was that there's no connective tissue from the old Badgers to these Badgers. John Gruden has no connection. It's fine. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but that one doesn't move the needle for me. Bringing back J.J. Watt, when Monte Ball told us that Jeff Grimes texted all the running backs, like, that's what moves the needle for me. Reconnect Wisconsin football of old to Wisconsin football now. That connective tissue will help with recruiting, help overall, help with brand lift, every one of those things. John Gruden is, I feel like, been at every college out there. So I'm not saying John Gruden isn't like inspiring or someone to have out there, but that's, you know, it's like you're doing a speaking thing. It's like, That's just someone you hire. John Gruden's probably also speaking to a sales team in Madison right after that. So, like, it just doesn't carry as much weight when you got a guy like J.J. Watt coming through who's a former Badger. But
pay for the cameo fee? John Gruden can talk to you.
Exactly. And again, it's not specific to John Gruden. If they had Nick Saban in, I mean, at least he coached college football. John Gruden wasn't even a college football coach. Yeah. Right? I mean, so, like, if they had had someone like another big name, I still wouldn't have been as excited unless they had ties to Wisconsin.
I see a little bit. I did love the message that Gruden had, but I don't think he's at the same level as J.J. Watt.
Yeah,
J.J. is – it's J.J.
But it's also – John Gruden message, I guarantee if you saw every other team he went to, it's the same damn message every – whether he's talking to a team like Wisconsin, every team that's an underdog, he gives the same – be their nightmare speech.
Yeah.
And every team that is a perennial favorite, he probably just – gives a different version of be their nightmare and make them pay for, you know, like
ChatGPT, fire up this locker room.
I feel John Gruden at this point, he's more of an extension of Big Cat and his connection to Wisconsin. Yeah.
I'd rather have Big Cat speak than like John Gruden. Like, I mean, at least he's a Badger connector.
It's like a funny thing, not wow, this guy's a legend.
Yeah, I just, if you had to bet money, I would bet that John Gruden gives this, the same variation of the speech within 100 words every school he goes to. J.J. Watt is not going to every school. All right, but that gets us into the last time we did the show, we did defensive predictions. We can get into players. I feel like defensively, fans that watch the show, yeah, they're going to know a lot of these players, but realistically, like, Hallman is the one that's going to stand out to most of them. I want to talk more about the defense in general and Mike Tressel, defensive coordinator. This one's interesting because he's now in his third year here, so I think we can set some guidelines here what we want out of Wisconsin defense. And this year, and I think this was a good year-to-year comp, so last year they allowed 23 points per game. They had one of the toughest schedules in all of football last year. They're going to have another tough schedule in football this year. I will tell you this. I will be calling this defense. I will be over the moon with this defense if they're in the teens. That's where I am right now. But if they can knock it down to 20 points per game with this schedule, I'm going to feel like this defense is ready to go.
I'm almost concerned about, or not concerned, but more so just wondering if they are going to break into the trend that Jim Leonard had them on, was being in total defense, was being a consistent in the teens and even in the top 10.
Yep.
Because just looking at the years that Wisconsin, from a total defense standpoint, has been, you know, Jim Leonard had top 10 finishes. And I understand that the Big Ten and all that is changing, but still, at the end of the day, for me, I'm like, Jim Leonard's defense, that those are just,
I don't
get
it. We'll get into that. Like, I think that was a little inflated. And I don't want to get here ripping on Jim Leonard, but like, when you have the schedule that Jim Leonard had, you gotta account for it. You gotta put some sort of grade on a curve there, because Jim Leonard never faced a schedule like the Badgers faced last year.
Fair enough.
Now I will give you that defense under Jim Leonard was better, but those are better players. But that was a different recruiting time. Again, schematically, TBD, Tressel or Jim Leonard, because players wise, Jim Leonard basically never had to coach, barely had to coach in the NIL era, barely.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a whole different ballgame as well. We're basically comparing apples and, I don't know, Sour Patch Kids. Like, it's just, they're not at all. Yeah, they both have sugar, but one's natural, one's unnatural. Like, they're not the same. All right, yards per game, that's the part that has to drop dramatically.
Yes.
I would say that's got to be, well, it's got to be under 300 yards per game allowed. For, again, for me to feel like this defense is back to Badger-type defense.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if we're trying to talk about the offense, if they need to break the 300, and I think even, I don't know, 350, we'll just see. Let's figure out. Yeah. Let's figure this out as we go. But they definitely need to be at least a sub. Oof, I don't even think sub 300 will do the job. I think it's got to be, I'm saying like 275. I mean, I know I'm just putting out numbers here, but I think the Badgers defense has to, like, no more than 275 of total yards, or what was it? Rather, yards per game. That's,
I have a
that's
bad
feel
feeling
like
that's just not going to be feasible when you're playing Oregon's offense, Ohio State's offense, Alabama's offense, all in one season.
There's some
total yards,
but yards per game, I feel like there are some games you could really,
you could you could hold an Iowa
up, yeah,
down to like
even
150,
a Michigan
under 200,
and some Miami and the I forgot the directional Michigan school they're playing, like some of these schools you can hold
Middle
in the
Tennessee
place.
State,
yeah. Right around that 300 number is what I'm looking for. Dynamic plays, that needs to be, honestly, this whole number, not as a each specific category, 17 sacks, 4 interceptions, 8 fumble recoveries, 4 forced fumbles, like, I just need the overall, add all those up, I need that number to double.
I really want to see sacks and fumbles go through the roof, particularly because of the defensive line. I just think of the years that, I'm still relatively younger in my Wisconsin football coverage window, but I just think about the guys that are now in the league that are, were on the line. You think of Keanu Benton. Also, it's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Keanu. Former ESPN teammate of ours. Or ESPN
yeah,
Madison.
He was on Jim Matt and Molly as a regular.
Yeah. Keanu Benton, so happy birthday to him. But when Keanu Benton was coming off the line, even you had Leo Chanel and Jack Sanborn as the linebackers coming off and being those like hungry guys coming off, whether it was coming off the line on the blitz or whatever it is. The blitz just needs to come back. I just want to see a hungry defensive line. I don't know what it is, but I love it. Randomly, like I remember we got into like a conversation, my friends and I, just, you know, just guys being dudes, just talking ball, whatever. If you could be whatever position coach, what would you be? And I said defensive line for some reason. That's what it is. I love the defensive line. Wisconsin's defensive line needs to come back. So if we're talking about dynamic plays, sacks and fumbles, those are the two that stand out to me. I love to see, like, if, especially in these marquee games, Rico Hallman, unfortunately for Kareem, we'll see, maybe he does play, but we'll figure that out. But I'd love to see Rico Hallman, you know, get into that interception mark. But something over these last few years, I haven't been impressed with Tressel's defensive line. And whether it's, you know, just the mix of the players or they just keep rotating guys in and out, is it the, are they running a different scheme? How they're rushing, like, I just want to see more of that because I think that's really when Wisconsin's at its bread and butter. Like, I think about the Ohio State game 2 years ago, and I think on the opening drive, Wisconsin forced a fumble. Or no, last year, rather. Wisconsin forced a fumble, I think. I'm getting mixed up right now. But I think it was Ohio State when they were here, Wisconsin forcing a fumble, I think, on the opening drive. Like, that was electric. That was huge when that had happened. And when those moments just feel like they're so rare. So If we need to see some dynamic plays, I think out of the three that we have here from what we categorize, sacks, interceptions, and fumbles, I got to see that. I got to see the defensive line really causing some nightmares.
All right, let's get total defense here. We'll just do this quick. They're 41st last season. Let's just get 31st or under. All right, let's get to the portal.
It's time for the Badgers Twitter portal.
All right, we're going to go pretty quick today with the Badgers Twitter portal, starting with a tweet from our very own Badger Barstool. I think this is absolutely absurd. We've talked ad nauseum about the Badgers' schedule and its difficulty this season, and apparently the SEC Network put out a tweet that it doesn't get any tougher than the SEC, and somehow the top 11 hardest schedules are in the SEC. That has to be the biggest load of hogwash that has ever been put on the internet. This is just insanity.
How, like, does Vanderbilt have a harder schedule than Alabama?
Way.
Well, I'll say this. I would imagine they're all using the same metric.
Exactly.
But here's the thing. They all have to play each other. So Vanderbilt's going to have to play a lot of these schools. And the Big Ten's not on this list because teams like Wisconsin drag down Big Ten right now. Like, that's not a hard strength of schedule game. Wisconsin, I think the problem is the Big Ten games against each other are not viewed high enough. Like, Wisconsin's non-conference is obviously pretty impressive. But when you have, like, Wisconsin-Iowa, that's not the same as, like, Vanderbilt-Auburn. Like, and that's where it gets and the SEC is only getting bigger and more expansive with Oklahoma and other schools in there. So I think it just has to do with the top to bottom. I would imagine Big Ten's probably right behind all those and backfilling.
Yeah, but you're saying Wisconsin's schedule is not harder than 11
I'm saying that whatever ESPN used wasn't biased. I don't think they spun the math. I guess the only case you can make if you wanted to, and we'll move on to the next one, ESPN does not carry Big Ten football games. They carry
exactly.
SEC football games.
I think this is so biased. Like, there's no way Wisconsin doesn't have a top 10 hardest schedule. Every other metric has them at least in the top 10. It just pisses me off.
We'll ask Paul Feinbaum and see what he thinks on that.
Alex Dono, I feel like, will be unbiased. I want to hear his take later.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to the next one.
All right. Brett McMurphy, Alabama's Kalen DeBoer. Look at our schedule this year. We're playing Florida State and Wisconsin. We're into playing as many high-end games as possible. True or false, is Wisconsin a high-end game this year?
Nope, not for anyone else. No, absolutely, completely false. I wish it was, but no, we're talking like we're going to throw a parade for this team that wins 7 games this year.
Thanks for the pub, Kalen. I don't know if I feel it. I'm excited. I know that, Riley, you're going to be in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you pull out an upset for us out there, but I don't know if high-end is the word that I would... That's not my first word that I would use to describe this.
Next. No, I would not either. Last but not least, the Badgers put out, the basketball team put out their non-conference schedule. No, it's hard to see these games, but what non-conference basketball game most looking forward to this year?
Besides, like, the obviously the Marquette games, like that one, it almost feels conference.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'll steal one here, and I hate to do this to you, Pablo, but I
know you're gonna do it.
You know what? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna go BYU. I'll leave you, Villanova. I'll go BYU.
Okay.
I want to see the rematch. I'll go BYU. Oh, personal level, Oklahoma. Just from, like, I travel out there once in a while. That I'm excited to see, but I know that their top player Fears is in the draft now, but I'm sure Oklahoma is backfilling with some players.
Oklahoma's going to be fun for exhibition. Thank you for keeping the keeping Villanova for me. I know it's not Jay Wright's Cats, but man, that's going to be fun. Milwaukee, Fiserv Forum, Wisconsin, and Villanova, that last second edition. Shout out Mark Vandewettering, who also promoted to GM now too. So I'm sure he had a big part to play with that and the non-conference scheduling. So cool to have Villanova as a part of this non-conference schedule too. That's my pick.
All right, we got Alex Dono from Locked On Canes, Hurricanes postgame on 560 WQAM down in Miami. He's coming up next. It's Black Friday in July at Steinhoffel's, where deals are hotter than ever. Save 10% store-wide, plus get amazing specials like a beauty sleep mattress for just $399 and discover brand new arrivals, including solid wood panel beds and made-in-America dining tables. And don't forget, Steinhoffel's makes shopping easier with 18-month 0% interest financing. Steinhoffel's, Wisconsin's number one furniture and mattress destination. Shop in-store or at steinhoffels.com.
It's Black Friday in July at Steinhoffel's, and the deals are hotter than ever. Save 10% store-wide, then get amazing deals like a beauty sleep mattress $399 or this outdoor sectional now $989. Plus, check out new items like this solid wood panel bed and made-in-America dining table. Make shopping easier with Steinhoffel's 18-month 0% interest financing. Steinhoffel's is Wisconsin's furniture and mattress leader. Shop in-store or at steinhoffels.com.
All right, we are thrilled to be joined by Alex Dono from Locked On Canes, Hurricanes postgame on 560 WQAM. This is also one of my old connects, Ken Levicka, we had on a while back to talk about FAU.
Man, transfer. You know everybody out here.
I knew a lot of people down in Florida. Alex and I were probably doing the same type of job for different radio stations down there back in the day. But Alex, thanks for hopping on, and we're excited to talk a little. It's kind of a weird mini rivalry, even though it's a non-traditional one between Wisconsin and Miami. There's been a couple games, and now we got this recruiting mix too.
Yeah, and it's crazy because this entire story, it's like the perfect example of, you know, for people like us who do sports talk radio, we also have to become legal experts. Yeah. We have to become accountants in order to cover NIL, and now, you know, to cover the house settlement and what it all means and these lawsuits. And so, yeah, there's been a little bit of a bad blood here over this Xavier Lucas saga, and I can see how both sides, you know, would have their contentions that we are right and the other side is wrong on this one.
Yeah, so let's get right into it, because with Xavier Lucas, my general take on this is that if this had happened after the settlement, Wisconsin's got a case. Unfortunately, because this was a contract written before the settlement said these contracts were worth anything, I think Miami's going to be able to walk away with Xavier Lucas. He also did something interesting, Alex, where he unenrolled at Wisconsin and then enrolled at Miami and then joined the program, which is another workaround here. So what is the general feel in Miami about Xavier Lucas? Do they worry about any sort of repercussion from a pretty inept NCAA? And then also the on-the-field impact of what Lucas could bring down there.
Well, first of all, Jim, you characterized it, I think, perfectly when you talk about the timing of that alleged contract that Wisconsin, you know, claims that he violated. I think that the strongest case that Xavier Lucas would have, and of course Miami would have. Now, it's interesting, Wisconsin is suing Miami, but they're not suing Xavier Lucas, which kind of makes sense because you don't want to look so petty that we're suing players. But I did speak with Lucas's lawyer, you know, a name that's probably very familiar to Wisconsin fans these days, Darren Heitner. You know, I spoke to him back in either December, I guess January, when the story was unfolding, and something that he would repeatedly bring up to me was, you know, they try to lock Lucas into this contract over his NIL exclusive NIL rights, but they're doing this several months before the house settlement was even passed, and that at that time, December and January, you really had no firm guarantee that the house settlement was going to be passed. And so Heitner referred to the deal not as a binding contract, but as a memorandum of understanding that you can't possibly legally, in his mind, I'm sure, you know, Wisconsin feels differently about it, but you can't bind the player into a contract based on a hypothetical settlement that hasn't even happened yet. In terms of how, you know, Miami fans feel about it, I mean, first and foremost, you got to look at the Xavier Lucas on the field versus all this other stuff off the field. I mean, on the field, I think Miami fans are really excited. I mean, this is a player who's from South Florida, you know, went to American Heritage, which is a very important, you know, a pipeline school Miami tries to recruit. I mean, Heritage is such a powerhouse program. Players from that team go all around the country, but Miami tries to get as many Heritage players as possible. This is a player Miami liked coming out of high school, but he ultimately chose Wisconsin. And the Hurricanes were and are in dire need of defensive secondary help, because that was really the Achilles heel of a team that underachieved last year. I mean, the offense was fantastic. Cam Ward was incredible. The defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. So, you know, having Lucas, who is already, you know, he was in Miami for spring football, performed well. There's a lot of excitement for the on the field portion of it. In terms of the off the field, you know, if you ask Miami fans, are you concerned about potential sanctions? For most, the answer will be yes, because, you know, there's a lot of muscle memory on that. I mean, Miami, you know, for right or for wrong, you know, over the last 40 years has often been in the crosshairs of the NCAA, and they've been targeted. They've been sanctioned multiple times. And so I think there is a little bit of a concern. I mean, from where I sit and until I hear differently, and there's a couple of factors here. I mean, first of all, we're so early in the litigation, like, you know, we have no idea if this is actually going to go to court or if there's going to be some kind of a settlement. So we're like so far away from discovery or anything like that. And then the other part of it is, now that the House settlement has passed, you know, the NCAA has basically punted their enforcement arm to this new college sports commission. And we don't know exactly how they're going to operate, because we don't have a history. Like, is the College Sports Commission going to put a bullseye on Miami and say, you know what, we really want to investigate to set an example against tampering or alleged tampering? Or is the commission, you know, going to kind of sit on their hands? We don't really know. I mean, for my understanding, and again, we're so early on in the process, I think probably the most important objective for Wisconsin and also for the Big Ten, because if I understand correctly, this contract that Xavier Lucas signed was a template that was created by the conference that multiple programs were using. So I really think that for Wisconsin, probably the greater goal is you want to get a judge to bless this agreement and say, yes, this should have been enforced and it's enforceable moving forward, so that in the future, you know, again, I don't think there's any way to bring Xavier Lucas back to Wisconsin. I think the genie's already out of the bottle on that one. Yep. But at least for future players, you could say, hey, when you sign this agreement, you can't just then up and leave and go somewhere else. So I think getting that contract basically validated and blessed by a judge is probably the most important thing. Until I hear otherwise, I don't feel like Miami's going to have any sort of heavy sanctions or anything because of this. I think at most, you know, I know Wisconsin is reportedly seeking some financial damages. Maybe there is some undisclosed amount of money that will have to be paid.
The other interesting thing here is, as we learn to be legal scholars, is where is this case going to be heard? Wisconsin's going to want to be heard as close to Madison, Wisconsin as possible. Not that the judge is going to be like, I'm a Badger fan, I'm going to rule in his favor, but there might just be more of a Midwest or whatever sensibility, the Big Ten side of things. And I'm sure there's going to be fights about where Miami wants this to be held and where this is going to be heard. So that's just a whole other aspect of it. But you're right, Alex. No, Xavier Lucas is going to play for Miami. Worst case scenario, this would for Miami, send some money to Wisconsin. Otherwise, the precedent that could be set going forward is interesting, because the other part of this is a judge could look at this and say, this contract doesn't hold any value regardless. So then all these new contracts from this new settlement that come through, it could all of a sudden, before it even gets started, this case right here from Wisconsin to Miami could blow the whole new settlement out of the water, because they could say, hey, you're right, this is just a memorandum of understanding. These contracts are not binding at all.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, one of the things that I wonder, and again, this is, you know, this case might end up setting a lot of, you know, literal precedents for the future, because something I'm still confused about with this whole thing about signing players to binding agreements, they're still not defined as employees.
Right.
Like, despite, you know, they're getting revenue sharing money. They're getting paid directly from universities now, which is unprecedented, but they're still considered to be quote unquote student athletes or independent contractors. And so there's a lot of stuff that schools and conferences want to do with these players in terms of binding agreements. To me, it sounds like something you can only get away with if you define them as employees.
Yeah, Alex, I'm glad that you said that too, because it's like we're seeing developments from the rev share too with that ruling, and also just, you know, we've had discussions on different shows too of like whether or not, you know, the NCAA and institutions are going to essentially rule them as employees down the road. Big picture, I mean, do you feel like that there is some true movement? Do you feel like that is where we're going to be heading, or that's probably the best route to try to handle situations like this moving forward?
I think it is the best route. I guess the only exception would be is if, and I know there have been some big players, including Nick Saban, who's been trying to make pleas
yep.
to Congress, right, to basically come up with these exceptions where we can do all this stuff we want to do without defining them as employees. So if there is some sort of congressional oversight, I mean, yeah. There's a lot going on in the world right now, so yeah. I don't know like how high on the docket college football reform is right now in Congress. Seems like there's a lot of other stuff outside of sports that they could be talking about right now. So, I mean, outside of congressional oversight, because they kind of have to redefine the laws here, literally, because, you know, it's something I've noticed over the last 10 years or so, and a lot of this started with, you know, Ed O'Bannon, which ended up creating NIL in the first place. It's like every time the NCAA gets taken to court over antitrust, they get their butts kicked every single time. They're like 0-50 yeah. in antitrust lawsuits. So I don't know if they're suddenly going to start winning these things.
Getting to the football side of things, because I just the law and, dun, dun, law and order jump around is over now. We'll talk a little bit of actual football side of it. It is kind of, and with the recruiting side of it, obviously Wisconsin, I mean, they did get a recruiting get by getting Xavier Lucas out of South Florida. Wisconsin's had Des Southward. There's been a good chunk of players, Zach Brown back in the day. I'm sure I'm missing better ones, of players that came, Connor O'Neill. There's a lot of players that came out of Southern Florida up to Wisconsin that were successful at Wisconsin that the Badgers are able to recruit out of there. So that was, I know under Brett Bielema for sure, that's a place they wanted to go to, was South Florida, to pull some players out of South Florida. And then now you have, they've played three times since 2009. And I'll give you, like the champs or the Outback Bowl, whatever one it was, and the Pinstripe Bowl. I don't know how much Miami cared. Like, I think that Wisconsin always cared about these bowl games. But the one thing we got is the Orange Bowl, and you got the gif of Paul Christ and the turnover chain my ass sort of thing here. So it there it is on the screen. And that's so out of character for him, Alex. Like, he is the most steady Eddie Boyne person you could ever be around, at least publicly. But there is, do you kind of guys feel that in Miami? There is kind of this sort of mini rivalry. I mean, Donna Salela was Madison. There was rumors maybe at some point Barry Alvarez could be interested in getting down to Miami. So there's always, in Madison, Wisconsin, always an eye on the Hurricanes down there.
Well, you know what? Those matchups you talked about, and yeah, a lot of Miami fans, you know, when it comes to the on-the-field stuff, have nightmares about Wisconsin, because every time Miami played Wisconsin, you know, between that time, between yep. 2009 and 2017, they just got pushed around, literally pushed around, completely out-muscled, yep. completely outmatched at the line of scrimmage. And to me, that very much defines what Miami was and what Miami was lacking during that era. And the identity that they're now trying to create, obviously there are always going to be, you know, some imperfections with a Mario Cristobal coach team when people talk about all the sideline stuff and the decision making. But I firmly believe in the way that Mario Cristobal is building his team from a roster standpoint, because, again, you know, when Miami during that era would go up against especially Big Ten teams, I thought were a really poor matchup, because Miami's offensive line and overall defensive line play were lacking for too many years, where they would get shoved around. And then, you know, enter Coach Cristobal, who, you know, currently for the class of 2026 has the number one player in the country, offensive tackle Jackson Cantwell, committed. He's landed some five-star offensive linemen, some five-star defensive linemen. And so really Miami is trying to kind of create that sort of identity that they would run into when they would face a Wisconsin in those years. And hey, if you can literally out muscle the opposition, and your bigger, stronger players are pushing the you know, less strong, slower players on the other sideline, it's going to give you a great opportunity to win. And so, yeah, I mean, I you know, and who knows what the next couple of years could hold. I mean, you know, if Miami is so fortunate to become a college football playoff team, and if they can run into Wisconsin either in a bowl game or maybe in a CFP matchup, I think Miami fans would be very curious to see if they are, you know, physically more up to the challenge. Because yeah, those, especially that Orange Bowl game in 2017, I mean, Miami just got dog walked by the Badgers, and so yeah, they're trying to create more of a physically imposing squad. And to Mario Cristobal, it's always going to start up front.
Alex, I think you had my ears are ringing, at least when you brought up Wisconsin and a CFP or even like a bowl game right now. Honestly, the ears are ringing right now. Yeah. Just out of curiosity, more like, you know, your perspective on the national perception of what Wisconsin is. You know, we've talked about how it's a tough schedule for Wisconsin this year. How are they going to fare up? Is that brand almost being lost all of a sudden because of the last few years that they've had? What's your perspective on how you view Wisconsin football, especially over these last couple years?
I think that's a phenomenal question. I think part of the reason why, you know, outside in South Florida is very far away from Wisconsin, of course, geographically. And I do think some of that brand gets lost a little bit at this moment. And to me, it has a lot to do with, first of all, how much deeper the Big Ten has become and how much more star power there is now in that conference with, you know, the couple of seasons of a run that Oregon has been on. You know, a team like USC, who I know hasn't gotten the results in recent years, but they get so much buzz on the recruiting trail with the you know, they have the number one class right now, and folks think maybe Lincoln Riley is finally bringing them back. And of course, Ohio State winning the national championship last year, Michigan winning it the year before. So if anything, I think, and of course, I'm geographically very far away from where you gentlemen are at this point, where, you know, you're in the Badger bubble, but I think far outside of that Badger bubble, there's just a little bit. Wisconsin's a little bit off the radar right now. You know, for Miami fans, it's a little bit on the radar because not only the Xavier Lucas thing, but then, you know, last year with Tyler Van Dyke having a cup of coffee in Madison, that was another thing that brought Wisconsin to Miami's attention. But just in terms of, like, you know, the buzz of, hey, it's Saturday and Wisconsin's playing, there's definitely not been as much of that over the last couple of years. And, you know, but fellas, I mean, in that very competitive Big Ten, if Wisconsin can go on a run this year, they can quickly put themselves back in that conversation.
Alex, last thing I have for you is that, you know, when I was down in Miami, it was during the Randy Shannon era. It wasn't great. But it was a little tail end of the Larry Coker era. And you look at Miami from 85 really through 2005, maybe a little 2006. They were a team that was, I think they missed like one. They weren't ranked in the top 25 at the end of the season one time during that window. They missed a total of two bowl games. I think only one bowl game in that window. Since then, it's been up and down. There was a big, tough stretch with Shannon and Golden. Mark Richt got back on the map, especially compared to Miami standards, because that's a national championship brand those fans carry down there. And now Mario Cristobal is trying to turn it back around. But it is one of those things where it's hard, as Wisconsin's stumbling into it right now, to maintain success as the college football landscape changes and coaches changes. So just your insight of seeing this team probably, you know, from the Coker era, maybe obviously a little bit of Butch Davis era through now, compared to what it was with Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson and even my old guy Howard Schnellenberger.
Yeah, I mean, what happened with Miami was they fell behind really quickly when college football was evolving to really become like another pro league. I mean, obviously the NFL is what it is, but, you know, because you go back to the 80s and 90s, and I give a lot of credit to Sam Jankovic, who was the athletic director, you know, most successful athletic director from a football point of view Miami ever had during that era, because Miami never had a massive budget, but most schools didn't in those days. So he was able to make these incredible hires. And, you know, you had Howard Schnellenberger, you know, built the program into the early 80s, and then he leaves because, you know, Miami couldn't afford to pay him what he was worth at that time. So you lose Schnellenberger, and then you find a guy that at the time nobody knew, who's this Jimmy Johnson guy you're bringing in? And it turns out to be a stroke of genius, and you replace Jimmy Johnson with Dennis Erickson. Then you replace Dennis Erickson with you know, Butch Davis, who, you know, never actually won a championship at Miami, but maybe the best recruiter in Miami Hurricanes history, because Butch Davis literally built the team that went on to become the 2001 team that Larry Coker was the babysitter for, that team to win a national championship. And then, you know, what happened was, so Miami made these amazing hires with no budget, with, you know, facilities that were second rate when it comes to practice facilities, weight room, locker rooms, all that stuff, just second rate compared to, you know, big time, you know, powerhouse programs. And they were able to kind of get away with succeeding despite lacking in the other stuff. But then you fast forward to around 2005, and then you needed to have top notch facilities because that became a lot more important in recruiting. And then all of a sudden, the top college football coaches were making, you know, multi-million dollar deals. I mean, you mentioned, Jim, covering, you know, Randy Shannon. Like, yep. The reason why Randy Shannon was, one of the reasons why he was made head coach at that time, was he was already on the staff and he wasn't expensive. I mean, he was making under $1 million, you know, base salary at Miami. And so you got to this era where suddenly in the early 2000s, college football just became this arms race. And Miami had an administration at that time that didn't have that sort of ambition and just weren't really willing to spend and build what it took to become a contender. And, you know, they kind of floundered in that era for a long time. And I think it was when they initially hired Mark Richt in 2016 or 2015 was, yep, when they started to get kind of serious. But then when they really started to get serious, just in terms of like the resources and the spending, was, you know, when they decided to bring Mario Cristobal, who of course is an alumnus at Miami, you know, back over from Oregon, because, you know, they had to cut a big, yep, check to get him to leave Eugene at that time. And also in hiring Cristobal, he wanted guarantees. Are you going to spend on my assistant coaches? Are you going to spend on facilities? So I think that's really a point where Miami started to take it seriously, that in this era of college football, we have to be willing to be aligned from the organization, you know, from the administration on down. We have to act like we're the big boys out there, that we can't get away with doing it on a shoestring budget anymore. So I think Miami fell really behind on that stuff. And, you know, obviously, you know, the results on the field have been improving the last few years, not quite as good as the Miami fans would expect, you know, missing out on the ACC championship last year. But they continue to stack really highly ranked recruiting classes and transfer portal classes. I like the moves that they've made with their assistant coaches. Like, you know, a guy in Miami just brings over from the Big Ten, Corey Heatherman, who was coaching Minnesota's defense last year. They made him their new DC. I like what I see and hear from him so far. So I think things are moving in the right direction. But it's like at a certain point, it was like turning a cruise ship. Like it takes a while to do that. And I think the next couple of years are really going to be crucial to showing all of us where Miami really is.
Alex, I don't know if you realize how insightful that was probably for Badger fans, because I'll give you why is Wisconsin struggling? They were slow. Paul Chris specifically in the NIL, they did not know how to recruit it. They didn't even have a social media department in the recruiting side of things. He nixed it. He had the smallest recruiting staff in the Big Ten, to the point where guys ended up leaving because it was too much work to do. So I think a lot of Badger fans need to hear that and understand what Fickell has to do or had to do when he got here. We're only going to start seeing those things come to fruition this year and the following year, because we were what Miami was. We always were good on facilities. But then when Barry Alvarez stepped aside and this NIL stuff came through, that's why Mac went and got Fickell. That's why they did all this, is to avoid the ups and downs that Miami went through for so long because they were behind the times. So, Alex, thanks so much for the extra added insight there, because I think Badger fans sometimes forget that money talks in college football. It always has.
It sure does. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. That's Alex Donald from Locked On Canes and Hurricanes post-game show on 560 WQAM. Thanks to Alex for joining the show. This has been The Jump Around, a Badger-dedicated show.